Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book or an audiobook, I do the review and stick it here in the podcast feed. A little bit of feedback from the last podcast, I reviewed Gene Wolfe's The Shadow of the Torturer, and I said if I get a lot of good feedback, I'll do a full feedback show. But the thing is, I'm not going to do that because I did get quite a bit of good feedback. I've still got probably around about 6 emails that I need to reply to different people. But only one person thought I should actually continue reading through the series because I said, if you've got to give me some good reasons to continue reading through the series. And even the people who say, oh, I really enjoy it, most of them have said, don't bother reading it because if you're literally falling asleep, if it's a book that literally makes you fall asleep each time you start reading, you probably aren't going to get a lot out of the next books. So what I think I'm going to do actually is I'm going to wait until I can't remember how little I enjoyed the second half of The Shadow of the Torturer, maybe this time next year, and then I'll have a go at reading the next book in this series. So we'll work it out. But thanks a lot for all the great feedback. It has been really good. Lots of people said, oh, there's lots of questions and there's lots of different stuff. But to be honest, I never found that there was lots of questions or a lot of mystery in the first book there, The Shadow of the Torturer, that I thought I need to understand and get the answers to in the later books, which is really strange. Of course, lots of people said what you think is going to happen later on in the book doesn't exactly happen as you predicted. But again, it's not one of those things that I'm going to go, oh, I wonder what's happening here. I wonder what's going on there. Anyway, so thanks a lot for the emails and stuff. And if you haven't got a reply back from my email, don't worry, you will do hopefully in the next few days because I've got quite a few things to get through. News. Recently, I've been working a lot at home, which is why I've not been reading too much. I've been working a lot on my new show, which I'm really excited about. I've managed to get the stage built, or most of the stage built, to a point. Well, actually, to be honest, I was building it. I've been building it for about 2 years now, and I've managed to get it back to how it was in November 2008. So it's taken me around about 14 months to progress up to where I am now, to get it back to where it was. But it's a lot, lot better now, and hopefully in a few months' time, I'll have some videos to share with you people online. It's not very much to do with, not got a lot to do with science fiction or books or anything like that, but I think you'll be interested to see these other projects that I'm working on. And on Sunday, I'm getting on a plane and I'm going to spend a few days in India, 3 days in India, which again, I'm really looking forward to on my next work trip as well. But I've actually started uploading my new podcast, which is a travel podcast. It's called Luke Around the World, is a really bad pun, but hey, I didn't name it. And so go to my blog, lukeburridge.com/blog if you want to find out more about my travels and stuff like that. I'm going to keep them completely separate now from this podcast, and there's photographs and podcasting and stories and stuff like that for there, so check out that if you want to. Otherwise, I'm going to move straight on now to today's review. The book I read or listened to on audiobook is called Daemon, depending on how you want to pronounce it. I'm going to call it Daemon from now on, and it's by Daniel Suarez, and it came out in 2009. It's about a year old this time. And I'd heard a few things about it, and I'd heard the hype. You know, I guess it was the hype mainly which made me read it. But a few people suggested it on by email, and I think on Goodreads.com as well. And then I listened to some podcasts on the Twit network. I don't always listen to the actual Twit podcast, but a few others with Leo Laporte, and he does these Audible ads. So he says, check out Daemon. And also it was on the Sword of Laser podcast, and they were talking about it there as well, although I haven't actually listened to that their podcast about it. Because I don't normally read reviews of books before I review them, or don't read a lot about it. All I just know is that a lot of people were saying this book was good, and it was a bit cyberpunky, but it was like cyberpunk and sort of techno thriller, but with a really good use of current technology. And that really intrigued me to read sort of like a science fiction techno thriller kind of book of that style. So what I didn't know about the book was that it's actually a first novel. And that's not normally a bad thing, you know. I mean, there are some first novels which are really, really good. That's great. But also, what I didn't know, it was first self-published, but a few years ago, before being picked up by a real publisher and then published for real, or if you want to call it real publishing, last year. So it's actually a bit older book than I thought it was. And also, I don't normally do self-published novels. Some people say, hey, can I send you my novel to review on your book review podcast, and often I'll just say, no, don't worry about it, because I'm not that much into self-published novels, because I like that sort of filter of a publisher first. Not that they're always good, or that I always agree with the editors and the agents and the publishers' choice of books to put out there, but, you know, normally it's a good cutoff point. It's like a non-arbitrary cutoff point. So anyway, I picked this book up. In fact, I couldn't find it on Audible, because while Audible is pretty cool, there's lots and lots of books which I'd love to read, which I can't get here in Germany because Audible doesn't have the audiobook rights. But then there aren't any English audiobook rights here in Germany. So even though I have an Audible account, I've got a Platinum account, I have money to give them, they don't have the book to sell me, and I was trying to find this book somewhere, so in the end I did just download it, but you know, I don't feel bad about that. If all I've got is money and I'm going, someone take my money, I want to pay for this book, someone just take me this, give me this book for this money, and nobody can do it, I don't mind getting a torrent at that point. But anyway, so I did download it, and the audiobook is actually, it's all right. You know, the narration is by a guy called Jeff Gerner, and he's pretty good, you know, quite engaging. It's very male. It's sort of like he's talking about everything as though it's the coolest thing ever. Like, oh yeah, and this is great. Oh, and this is great. And this is great. Which does wear down a bit, but otherwise it does keep the excitement up even through some of the slower passages in the book. And also, he does have some good voices, except he has the worst South African accent I think I've ever heard. And I would do an impression of it, but I would be doing a really bad South African accent, and it still wouldn't be as bad as his, which is a real pity. But otherwise, yeah, you know, I'd not any real complaints about the narration. The cool thing is because there's a lot of computer stuff, he does have these different voice effects to say when he's talking in the voice of a computer, and also there's a female narrator who comes on and does the female voice of the computer as well at some points, and I quite like that as well. The other strange part of it is that there's parts of the book which are written sort of as a script. You have these different agencies sitting around a table, or representatives of like the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, DARPA, and it's obviously written as a script with like just like attributions at the beginning, so when he's doing it, he goes NSA and then does the voice, and then CIA and then this voice, and NSA and then does that voice, and it can get a little bit confusing like when he first starts. But I found that it was quite cool that like within about a minute of that conversation with him like reading a script with like the attribution just before every single person talks, I actually got into it and didn't mind it at all, which was surprising, actually. It's quite surprising how quickly your brain picks up and different ways of reading or consuming written fiction that you wouldn't have had. Anyway, moving on to the world of the book. I guess it's meant to be today's world, maybe a few years ago, or maybe today, or maybe in a few years' time. But it was written at like maybe 2007, I guess it was when it was written, or when it was thought out, this book was thought out. So we're in a slightly alternative dimension, just a few years in advance of 2007, but not quite the 2010 as we know it today. But it is a really weird alternative dimension where like the number of psychopaths in the world has increased to like a remarkable degree, and anyone in a position of power has lost all use of their brains, let me just put it that way, because there's a lot of idiotic stuff in the book, and a lot of things which are really like violent and really stupid, which were meant to presume that people would be happy to do or willing to do. And I just don't believe anyone would be willing to carry out a lot of the things that people carry out in this book. But I'll get onto that later. So the plot starts out pretty good. I'll just do the pitch. The pitch of the book is, I think, probably what got this book published in the first place, because it's actually a really clever idea, or a really interesting idea. The idea is that a game designer called Sobel, let me just quickly look up his name. I opened the Wikipedia page here, mainly to see how long the book was as well. It says 444 pages anyway. It was first published, this book. Sorry, let's go back here. I just looked up on Wikipedia. So it was first published under a different name in 2006, but then it was published again in 2009. So you've got, let me go back here to the story. Matthew A. Sobel, PhD. He is a game designer, a billionaire game designer, and he's got cancer, brain cancer. And then when he dies, he puts in place this computer program, this distributed automated computer program, which would carry out some of his wishes and plans after he dies. So what it does, it looks out in the newspapers or the news websites like Google News for his own obituary. And when it sees his own obituary, it starts to put in place a different plan. And of course, some people die and other things happen and money is transferred and different things like that. And you're all like, oh, we're pretty good stuff. So this idea of a computer program which is made by a dead person and is fulfilling a dead person's wishes after the dead person is dead is actually a really good idea. And if someone came to me with that idea and I'd be like, yeah, let's make the film, or yeah, I'll buy that novel straight away, because that's the kind of, because it's a really great concept. And the book actually starts off pretty good. It's like a classic sort of murder mystery kind of thing going on there, and the first few steps are plausible. Okay, someone's been found dead, and it's like, oh, why have they been found dead? Well, here it is, and he's been strangled. And it's like, oh, well, has he been strangled or has he just had a bike accident? No, it's really like this. And then it works out, and they go up to Sobel's mansion, and the whole mansion is sort of booby-trapped and things like that. And it's really interesting because he's put in place all these computer systems, and then there's someone else that's in this server farm down here in this other part of on this other part of California, and that's been, someone's died there as well, and other two things linked. And it's actually really good. I was really getting into it, you know, for the first maybe quarter of the book. There's lots of good steps, you know, not all of the steps are plausible. There's some stuff which takes place which is a bit silly, but all the action is small. It all's taking part in this single house and on this single network of computers and these single sort of set of people, these few sets of people. However, quite quickly we're told that all of this is just a diversion. The stuff that's happening in his mansion is just a diversion. And I was like, well, is it just a diversion? Well, if it is just a diversion, why are they putting all this effort into it? But then it does turn out just to be a diversion. And then, around about a third of the way through the book, the two main characters, like there's the police detective guy, his name is Peter Seebeck, and another computer programmer who is, or computer, what, like, administrator, a network administrator called Jonathan Ross, not Wassy, but just called Jonathan Ross. Those two characters are then taken out of the story. I don't want to give away what happens to them or anything like that, but suddenly they're removed from the story. And then it just goes 6 months later. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a second. There's like 1,000 loose ends which haven't to be tied up here. The person that they're trying to pin it on isn't going to stick. And, you know, the demon is doing all this other stuff, and he's got like lackeys running around for him already. And I was just reading it, and suddenly it's like 6 months later. I was like, well, we know there's a demon there. Everybody else knows there's a demon there. Some people are calling it a hoax, but it's obviously not a hoax because the way it's been set up there, it's obviously Sobel who has done this, and not the person that they're trying to pin it on. And it's just, and it just skips forward 6 months, and then like the whole world is meant to be different. And I was really into it. Like, you know, they went to the dead guy's funeral, and they were getting secret messages left on answer phones and stuff like that. There's all this really interesting stuff, and suddenly it just goes, okay, we'll remove the interesting characters, and all the immediacy of the drama, all the immediacy of the plot, everything that's happening, you know, I thought the whole book would play out in the 2 weeks after someone had died. Suddenly you go 6 months later. So I'm like, okay, so the demon is now 6 months old after he's died, and it's still running no problem at all. And I'm thinking, well, if it can do it that easy, if it can just survive that long, and the FBI and the NSA and DARPA and all these other institutes don't just immediately close it down, it means that it's too powerful. And all of the things that the demon wants to do, of course it can do in 6 months' time, no problem at all. And so what we're left with then is like this, like we just go, okay, we've removed the main two lead characters, so what we're going to do, okay, and this person working for this company, and they're going to have a run-in with a demon, and this is going to be a bad guy, and this bad guy is going to be recruited into the demon's plans. Oh, and there's this thing happening over here, and these people are going to do something to the demon as well. Oh, and this people over here, they're going to do something. And it just goes like a long series of these random scenes where you get the good guy doing this, and then you get a bad guy doing this, and then you get some victims of them doing this, and then it goes back, and here's some more good guys doing something, here's some more bad guys doing something, here's some other people, victims, who are being victimized by it. And it just keeps going on and on, just this long, random, lots of subplots, lots of sub-characters, and a lot of them are just introduced, and then they disappear. And I'm like, okay. And then, like, 200 pages later, they reappear and do one action, and then they disappear again. I was like, so that whole huge, long character introduction ages ago, what's that got to do with anything? And I don't mind books that do this, where you just have like lots of smaller characters doing actions and then coming back in and out of the story. But I really do mind it, considering the first third to half of the book was following like two, maybe three main characters, and then the other people were all bit players, and suddenly these three main characters drop out completely, and then all the bit players take over, and then there's other bit players, and then there's other bit players. And then another third of the book through, it suddenly goes another 6 months later. I'm like, oh, for goodness sake, how? It's just more random shit keeps going off. At the same time, the government knows what's happening. It knows exactly what's happening, but it's keeping the whole thing secret. And it doesn't make any sense, and there's other things that I don't want to spoil, but like the government trying to keep it all secret is stupid, because by now there's thousands of people involved, literally thousands upon thousands of people involved, thousands of people working for the demon, and it's like they're still trying to keep it secret, and it's just like, it's stupid. Why is this happening? You can't keep something secret when literally thousands of people are involved. It just doesn't happen. It can't happen. And this is a book which is meant to be based on the power of networks and the power of communications and the power of computers and the power of this, and it just doesn't work, because it's just stupid, and it's so stupid it sort of hurts. And I can't get over how stupid it is that the government is trying to keep the whole thing secret. It's as stupid as a Michael Bay film that you see, at the end of Transformers. They smash up an entire city. There's planes flying through buildings. There's robots jumping around buildings. There's robots smashing each other and killing people. And then at the end of the film, they're like, oh, and this is all actually secret, and we're going to lock it down, and the government's going to keep this all secret. I'm like, how can they be so bad at their job and yet so perfect at keeping massive events secret when they're not secret, and they can't be secret? For example, and I'm giving away like one scene here in the book. At one point, the author of the novel here obviously doesn't like spammers, even though now in the year 2000 spam isn't a problem anymore. I used to get literally hundreds and hundreds of spam emails a day. That's what happens when you put your email on the internet, and I've had a website for maybe well over 10 years now, and of course my email address is on my website, and it meant I used to get a lot of spam. I now have a Gmail account. Now I don't get any spam at all. I maybe like one spam or two spam emails get through the Gmail spam filter per week. And also, there's another book which I really enjoyed recently, which is called Anathem. And at the end, he does this really, really clever thing with spam. He talks about how spam is so much of the vast majority of the internet and the communication system that you have to root through. And it's really clever. You know, Neal Stephenson did spam in Anathem really, really cleverly here. The solution for spam here is that the demon commands all of his thousands of minions to kill all of the spammers in America. 6,000 people are killed. 6,000 people are killed by the demon, by the demon's minions. 6,000 people. And yet, the government is still trying to keep the demon a secret and is succeeding. And the person that they pinned it on earlier on, who is obviously not the person behind the demon, it still gets pinned on him. And I was thinking, wait a second. And I was reading this chapter, I was like, wait a second. Didn't like three chapters ago 6,000 people die, and yet they're still pinning it on this guy who's been in prison for the last year? And I was just like, I don't understand what's going on here at all. It's all pinned on the... And anyway, so... And then there's like a main character from the start of the book who you think's dead turns up later on. I was like, oh, okay, like that. And then suddenly this other character who had disappeared for a long time suddenly turns back up. And I'm like, wait a second. This guy was being chased by the police and by the FBI and the CIA, and it was like this whole, I thought it would be this whole cat and mouse thing, and suddenly he turns up and he's turned himself in, but we don't get to see him turning him back in. Or did he turn himself in, or was he captured again? Don't know. He's just suddenly working for the government. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And then suddenly there's love interest, and I'm like, where the hell did this turn up for? And then there's plot twists, but the plot twists aren't plot twists, because, you know, the only time there's any kind of plot twist is when we find out that someone who we didn't know was working for the demon is actually working for the demon, and that's it. It's one of those really, like, let me just put it this way, fucking shit plot twist, where the only thing that you work out is that this person is working for that person. I was like, oh, very good. I remember, which it was at the book that I reviewed, Singularity Sky, the only plot twist at the end of Singularity Sky, or like three of the main plot twists at the end of that by Charles Stross, was like, oh, and this person's working for this person's working for this person, this person's working for this person. I'm like, that's not a plot twist. That's not a plot twist. No plot has been twisted. All you've done is clarify two people's motivations, and that's it. And that's what you get like at the end of this. And then the worst thing about all of this, and I've not got to the worst thing. This is the worst thing about all of this plot here. All of this stuff that's so stupid it hurts. I'm getting to around about an hour away from the end of the book. This was last night. And I was chatting to Jesse from SFF Audio online. And I was like, I'm an hour away from the end of this book. It's not going to end. This is going to be a setup for a sequel. Because there's no way that they could have wrapped up all the loose threads and defeat the demon by the end, or for the demon to do anything big enough that, you know, it turns around and the demon wins at the end. And of course, I get through to the end, and it ends from one chapter to the next. It's literally like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, end. And I'm like, great. Thank you very much. You've sold me a book, and it's not a book. It's two books. And I've only read one book. It's like, I really want them to do this. If the story doesn't end by the end of the book, you can't call it a novel. You can't call it a story. You've got to call it the first in a series, or the first in a trilogy, or the first of two books and stuff. And if there are books like that, I don't mind reading them at all. I'll get into a fantasy series which is three books long, four books long, no problem at all. Like with Peter F. Hamilton and his books, you know, he does these trilogies and stuff. Great, I'll read them. I'll really enjoy them. And I don't mind that at the end of the novel, the story isn't finished, because I know it's going to be carried on. However, there has to be some kind of resolution at the end of an episode of a story. You can't just go bit of story, bit of story, bit of story, nothing. This is what I hated about Heroes. When I watched the TV show Heroes, it was just like scene, 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 that's it. And you didn't get anything at the end. No question was answered. What I did like about the first season of Lost, which, you know, I didn't bother watching Lost, but I liked about it that each episode there was a question asked at the beginning of the episode and it was answered at the end of the episode, even though the major questions weren't answered. But here we don't even get that. All we do is like, oh, and this person who you thought was dead, they're not dead either. And I'm like, oh, and we'll do some bullshit philosophizing at the end too, and just to say, oh yes, life is all about this, and there's Messiah stories, and Jesus rose from the dead, and Lazarus rose from the dead, and all these different people, and this person is now going to be alive again. And you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, just get on with, just end the book, and if it's not going to end, at least, anyway, so that was really, really, really disappointing. However, it could have been a good book. Like I said, the first part of the book, the first third of the book, I was really enjoying. It was a bit silly. Some of the technology was a little bit silly, and not very believable. However, the story idea was there. Now, I think somebody else should rewrite this book. Take the same premise, take the same idea that somebody puts in place a computer program after that carries out their will after they die, and if they're a psychopath, you know, if they've gone mental and it, what they want it to be a bad demon, great, that's good as well. But if they, you know, there's so many different ideas you could take this book. However, the worst thing about this, the idea, or that the way that Daniel Suarez betrays the idea, is by involving too many informed people. Because it would be awesome if the demon was just a computer program and the people that he used were being played without his knowledge. Like, he was using Amazon to deliver stuff to somebody, and then he was using like the Mechanical Turk on Amazon.com as well. Maybe it's not Amazon, which is bad, you know, but he's using that to, you know, to get people to build stuff for him or something like that, or do stuff for him online. He's saying, you know, that's what you can do with the Mechanical Turk. You get lots of people, pay them all a few pence each to do a small thing. So he gets one programmer to write this bit of code and another programmer to write that bit of code, and if he needs something sorting out that he can't do, he'll get someone on, you know, Mechanical Turk to do it, or he'll pay someone in India and outsource it in there and stuff like that. There's so many different ways that you can actually control people online to do different stuff, using eBay to sell stuff, using this to do that, using these other services, and all this ways that you can do things anonymously online, that it doesn't have to be a person on the other end, it can be a computer program on the other end, but nobody else knows anything. For example, there's this great video from Slate magazine where they showed how they used Google to play their advert on Fox News in a rerun of the was it the Sean Hannity program? I can't remember what it was there. But they didn't even have to do any face-to-face. All they did was set it up on Google and they had their advert played on TV. They just paid the right amount of money and it was on TV. That kind of stuff, where it doesn't have to be a human doing any of this, would have been really great. Now, if the demon needed a single pair of eyes or a pair of hands to do his bidding knowing, that would have been okay. So if it was the demon plus one guy, and that's what I thought it was going to be at the beginning of this book, or two people. There was two people that the demon was involving, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be the demon and two people. However, by the end of the book, it's not just the demon and two people, it's the demon and thousands upon thousands of people, and it's going to become this whole social movement. However, I can't believe that that many people would be involved with the demon, knowing that the demon's first action in the real world was to kill two people. Its second action in the real world was to kill many more people. And then from then on, the only actions that it had in the world is to destroy things and to kill people and to disrupt things. Now, again, if it was just two people that the demon managed to find who were bad enough to do that, and I can see it, and I really enjoyed how it first snagged the first two people that it got over onto its side, and I was like, this is making sense. But then the rest of the thousands of people who it brought over to its side was some people, you know, were criminals, some people were people who played computer games. And again, that didn't all make sense either. Like, there was, like, these different groups of people, and they were all getting on fine, and this person was doing this, but it became pointless. Now it wasn't about the demon anymore. Now it was about this network of 1,000 people. And the person commanding them didn't have to be a demon. It could have just been a real person. So, if you understand what I'm saying there, that anybody could have been controlling this entire group of people. It didn't have to be the computer demon, this distributed network of logic trees or whatever was going on there with the demon, to be able to do all of that stuff. So there was no point in it being software, and it was completely unbelievable by this point that a software could have done all of that. So in the end, I was thinking, this isn't going to be software. This is actually going to be somebody actually controlling everything and pulling the strings behind it. Maybe Sobel isn't dead. Maybe the person that we saw at his funeral isn't there. But it turns out, no, it is a completely now unbelievable situation with a completely unbelievable demon computer program with thousands of people who are all okay with killing thousands of people. And this is meant to be some new kind of social order that we're all meant to be happy with and sign up for. Well, I'm not entirely quite sure what was going on there. And that's what happened every step of the way. It's like every single step of the way, I was like, why? And this, why is this happening? And why is this happening? There was a few. I was like, why and how? But the why is like, you know, the first two killings were explained really well. I was like, great up. But then there's a whole stuff that happens in his house. And I was like, well, it's a diversion, is it? So I was like, so why is this happening? If this is a diversion, why is the demon proclaiming that he exists? And then why does he do that? And then why is it pinned on this other person over there? And it's all tried to be set up as a hoax. Why that? And then he kills lots of cops. Why? Why is this? And then there's this rave scene that goes on. I'm like, why is this happening? And then there's this reporter doing this kind of stuff. He's like, why did they do that? And then they kill all these people. And I was like, why do that? And then there's this one character. He puts himself, like, near the end of the book. He puts himself right in the middle of the biggest amount of action and trouble. And I'm like, why does he do that? It's like bringing it back to the Michael Bay Transformers thing. At one point, I can't believe I actually watched that film, but at one point they're going, hey, let's take the MacGuffin and let's try and if we take it to the city, we'll be able to hide it in the city. And I'm like, no, the reason why you want to take it to the city is because if you have the rest of the action in the desert, there's not enough buildings to blow up and shit to destroy. And so that's what you do. They just go, okay, let's drive this thing that all of the bad guys want into the middle of this massive population center, and that'll be the best place to protect it. And I'm like, why? And that's what you get in this book all the time. It's sort of like, and then they use all these cars to knock out this task force. And I'm like, why do that? And there's this other stuff. And I'm just like, why is this happening? And I don't mind not knowing why stuff happens. But if it's just random chaos and there's no reason for it to actually be in the book. And it's like, we could have skipped over that. We could have had something intelligent going on there or something actually happening. I don't mind stupid stuff happening if it's stupid people doing it. I do mind stupid stuff happening if it's intelligent people doing it for supposedly intelligent reasons. And also, if this is meant to be a thriller, any kind of thriller, which I think it is, there has to be logic, there has to be motivations, there has to be something behind it, and this is just random stuff happening all the time. Now, I don't have a whole lot of notes to go here, but I've only just got through the story. Let's get a bit quicker now as I go through some of the characters. I guess the protagonist is the daemon himself, because none of the main characters, who are the good guys in the novel, like I say, most of them, they don't actually make it all the way through the novel. Some of them, you know, reappear and disappear and stuff like that. But the only character with any real goal or mission except stop the daemon is to the daemon itself. And because the daemon is evil, I find it real hard to sort of root for the demon to succeed. Actually, at some points, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, up until about halfway through the book, maybe two-thirds of the way through the book, you actually want the antagonist to succeed in any kind of book. You want the bad guy, sorry, to succeed. You want it to be hard for the hero, so when the hero comes through and succeeds in the end, it's a real triumph. However, you don't actually want the demon to succeed, and you don't really want to, the bad person to succeed. You actually want the main driving force of the book is to be something that the main characters have got. There has to be something at stake for them. Their main thing can't just be to stop the bad people, because then they're the antagonist, not the protagonist, and the bad people are the protagonist. So you've just got the major characters, or the major good guys, are just reacting. And that's all they do, is they react, and then they react a bit more, they react a bit more, and they spend the whole book reacting. So maybe in the second book in the series, the follow-up to this book, maybe we'll get some of the good guys actually doing something, but otherwise they don't, which is a bit weird. Also, I don't think Daniel Suarez knows what a viewpoint character is. Now, a viewpoint character, you have to tell things from their point of view. And often in this book, we get different viewpoint characters, like within two paragraphs of each other. There's this one person, and then the viewpoint skips over to this person. So I was wondering, where is the mystery here, when at any point we can jump into anyone's head and find out all of the plans of everyone, what's going on here as well? So there was no mystery to the characters either. And then you go, okay, so this is a bad guy. How do we know he's a bad guy? Because he's a drug dealer. He's a hacker, like, but a bad hacker. He organizes raves which stream live sex shows, which is sort of like rape going on over the internet. And I'm like, what the hell? So this is the bad guy, is it? So, okay, well, I guess that's the bad guy. And we know he's a bad guy because he does some bad stuff. And this is a good guy. And how do we know this person's a good guy? Because he has no flaws at all and is utterly boring in every way. Okay, well, okay, that'll be the good guy then. And this is the bad guy. How do we know? Because he's completely shallow and he only cares about money and he only cares about power and everything like that. So, okay, that'll be the bad guy then. And this is a good guy. And I'm like, how do you know that? Because they're described as average looking and they lack any interesting characteristics at all. Okay, so that'll be a good guy. Then there's this other guy. I just made a note of this. It's like, okay, is this person good or bad? Well, he has character flaws. He has mystery. Does that mean he's bad? Probably. But then he's got no function at all in the book as well, except to hang around and watch the good guys doing stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, could this be the plant? Could this be the person who turns out to be the bad guy in the end, who's actually working for the demon? And I was like, you think? And then it's like, yeah, it is actually. So at the end of the novel, as well, there's none of the characters have changed at all. You know, the good guys are still good guys. The cop is still a good cop. He has no other motivations at the end of the book as he does. The bad guy is still bad. He still wants exactly the same things. The love interest is the only non-evil female character in the entire novel. There's actually two female characters in this book. There's one female character who is bad and one female character who is good, and I'm like, I wonder which one is going to be the love interest here. It would have been really clever if it was actually the bad one, the bad female, who would be the love interest, but of course no, it's not. The military guy is still a badass, but then, you know, I don't actually need interesting or complex characters. I don't mind if their characters don't have any of those classic character arcs, but however, they have to be good enough, they have to be clever enough, they have to be interesting enough to hang a story on them. However, Daniel Suarez knows that none of his main characters are actually interesting enough to hang a full story on them, which is why, like I say, he jumps around and he goes over to this character and he goes over to that character and he goes over to this character and goes over to that character, and you never actually get anything there at all. The action. I want to talk a little bit about the action, because it is like a really bad movie, like a Transformers movie, especially by the end of it, because there's actually cars which drive themselves and stuff like that. But there's this great clip by Eddie Izzard, which I'll play for you now.
Have you noticed that? In films, there's lots of car chases. No car chases in books, are there? He drove, he looked in the mirror behind him, and the man was driving. He looked in the mirror, and then he was driving. Oh, they drove fast, they drove. Driving fast and looking in the mirror, and the other guy was pulling a face, he was driving fast, and there was a terrible crash.
So there you go, car chases and books. Oh yeah, that's where we get here. We get mindless car chase after mindless car chase after mindless action after mindless gun battle after mindless this and that, you know. So it really does read like an action movie. Now again, I don't mind reading a book and having like a vicarious kind of experience as I go along with these people and I'm above different things, but it's literally like Eddie Izzard says, it's like it just doesn't work, and it really doesn't work here in the book as well. And like I say, a lot of the action takes place and it's all bloody, and this person gets splattered and this person gets blooded up and this person's top of their head gets chopped off and this person gets a spear through them and this person, and it doesn't really make any sense except to demonstrate, because Daniel Suarez is obviously like, oh, I've come up with this really cool way for this technology to kill someone. I've come up with this inventive way of killing somebody else. However, if there's no plot reason for it, it might as well just be somebody shooting someone with a gun. It might as well be someone slitting someone else's throat. If you want to have gore, you can do that. There's no reason to have gore except to show off your technological inventiveness. If I wanted to, I could probably come up with a really awesome way of killing someone. But if it's served just as well of me killing them with a conventional way of killing them, there's no reason for it to be in the story. It has to be some reason for it. And in this novel, the reason this novel was written is pretty much to say, hey, my name is Daniel Suarez, and I know about technology, and I'm going to kill people with interesting ways. And I'm like, like that. And anyway, the technology, I kept on thinking, who is this book written for? Because, you know, it was sold to me about being current technology used in an expert, believable kind of way. But the level of technology is too low for me. There's nothing in this book which I didn't already know about. And I'm not even some kind of tech head. I'm not even a big computer geek. I use an Apple laptop for the main reason I don't want to worry about all of the different kind of stuff. But it explains it in tedious details about, like, oh, and this is how you crack into a Wi-Fi network, and you use this program, and you ran this program, and then that program, and this program. And it gets down to the levels of individual mouse clicks on a screen. Now, this is something I've talked about before as well. Mundane actions with technology are only interesting if they're interesting to the character involved. For example, there is actually quite a good passage in the book where lots of people, it's like this distributed assembly of a device, and nobody is quite sure what they're actually building, but they're all being ordered around by a computer program in a cool way, you know, in like a flash mob, like orchestrated flash mob kind of way, that this person hands it off to that person and they insert this bit and then they hand it to that person, so nobody knows what's going on. That's actually a good way of dealing with technology. It's non-mundane for the people involved. What's bad, though, is when an expert cracker talks through, explains literally click by click, program by program, mouse move by mouse move, how he gets into a Wi-Fi router network thing. And I'm like, that is boring, because it's boring for the person who's doing it. Therefore, it's boring for me. And then there's another good thing, you know, when someone goes into a computer game and it's the first time in a computer game, and I'm like, this is interesting. We're seeing it through new eyes. It's non-mundane. Bad is when a high-level gamer goes through the same process, and I'm like, okay, that is annoying. You know, and it happens time and time again. Experts in their field will notice the tiny details. Like, when I'm an expert juggler, when I juggle, I don't worry about exact throws and catches. When I play combat, I don't worry about exact moves. You know, it's sort of like the strategy, the overall tactics involved and stuff like that, not that I step here, I throw this juggling club here, I stick my hand out here and knock that other person's juggling club out of their hand. You know, there's none of that there. I don't need to do all of that. But if somebody is new to that kind of thing, when they watch it or when they experience for the first time, you can vicariously go along for the ride with them. However, mundane actions by expert people, I'm just repeating myself. Let's move on a bit more. Oh yeah, also, I have massive problems with the technology. How can I know more about technology than the technology experts who are talking about this book saying it's awesome? I'm like, at one point they say, oh, we cracked this encryption, it only took us 2 months. And I'm like, so if you have encryption that takes 2 months to crack, why didn't the person who encrypted it just encrypt it better? And it would be impossible to get, or it's sort of like you'd have to run your computers, what is it, until the past the end of the universe to be able to crack the encryption with current technology and stuff like that. But they just crack the encryption. I'm like, okay. And then the demon, he seems to be able to get into any database in the world. And I'm like, how does he do that? And then he takes over like an entire business. And I'm like, how does it do that? And then he gets into like these government programs. And I'm like, how does it do that? And it's just presumed that this Sobel guy, this game designer, was amazing and could just do all of this. However, the amount of work that he would have to do, he's literally done thousands and thousands of people's work to program this computer game, to program the demon, to program all of the different stuff that the demon does, to predict all of the stuff that the demon needs to be able to do with all the people that it works with in the future, to be able to invent all the things that the demon invents later on. And this is all, he's meant to have done all of that in the 2 years, like when he had brain cancer before he was going to die. It's just like, how would one person do all of that? The prediction is impressive just in itself. You know, like in prediction, because that's what it is, because the AI is not meant to be like strong artificial intelligence. The demon is just following instructions and following, I don't know, I guess the only way to talk about it is with logic trees. If this, then go into that route, and in this, if we go that route. In the Foundation series, which also has this sort of like, you know, this prediction of whole populations. They do it, you know, was it Harry Seldon? He does it by calculating, like, for the masses, not individuals. But even then, things come up which messes it up. I think, is it the mule or something comes up in the Foundation, sort of like in the fourth story or something like that? And he doesn't foresee that, and it messes it up. Whereas here, you get this entire year, thousands upon thousands of people, entire social movement, all predicted before the person died, and yet everything that needs to be done, every single situation where one of the demon's minions needs to do something, the demon has already thought about it. And it's like, nothing can work this way. Everything can't be planned. And then there's also the larger scale problems, if that's not big enough, with like cars driving around killing people. And I'm like, okay, I can understand cars driving round, which actually happens early on in the book. I don't want to give too much away, but it happens at a location which is very well known to the program. And I'm like, okay, that could work out. And there's like a slightly plausible kind of technology going on there. And I'm like, okay, that could work out as well. But later on, they seem to have solved, you know, like the DARPA challenge where you can control a car driving down a road or across a desert, all that kind of stuff. Sobel has solved all of that without a single test, without any kind of experiments. It's in his head as a computer program, never actually applied to cars in the real world, and then it works in the real world, and they drive around a city and stuff like that. And I'm just, this is stupid. It's so stupid, it hurts. It really is that bad. And when it gets to the point where motorbikes are driving around without razors, without riders, with razor blades sticking out from the end and like robotically controlled arms which cut people and kill people and break down doors and ride around in the inside of, I'm literally going, this is so stupid. This technology is like 20, 30 years in the future, in our future now, and it's meant to be happening now. So people haven't even discovered Twitter yet, and yet there's motorbikes which can drive around themselves and kill people. And I'm like, in a computer game, yes, the world is a little bit more complex than that. And also, one of the bad things is that a lot of the technology is explained in like, hey, does anyone know how this happens? No, I don't know how this happens. Well, here it is. At one point, you actually get the computer going, do you want to know? Like, computer's got someone in this sticky situation. It's like, do you want to know how I'm talking to you now? Do you want to know how the sound system in this room works? And the guy goes, yes. And he's like, okay, it works like this. And then we get this technical explanation, and he makes a painfully obvious that it's like, oh, this is actually commercially available today. And it's like, okay, so we get it. It's real technology. And then he goes, and so this is how it works. And then they just kill the guy. And I'm like, so why did we have that entire passage of that technology being explained to that person? And then you just kill them straight away. And so the knowledge dies with them of how it works. And so bad. Really, really bad. Oh, yeah, and also, I keep saying also, I made a note of this, GPS. The demon is completely dependent on GPS. Everything runs on GPS because, everything runs on GPS. And they try. And I was like, you want to shut down? You want to shut down the demon? Just disable GPS for the day. Of course, if you do disable GPS for the day, lots of things would go wrong, but it means the demon would be completely, utterly useless. It wouldn't know how to interact with the real world, and people with eyes and people with ears and people with feet would be able to go around without any trouble from any cars or any motorized robotic transformer motorbikes and stuff like that. Anyway, that's it. I've got to quickly wrap up here. I'll get onto the writing and the themes. Writing is, the pacing is all off. Like I say, it just stops and just drops the main characters the other way through. I talked about that. The dialogue is as dull as dishwater. And also, even when you get through to the last chapter, they're still describing technology to each other. Oh, and this is how this works, and this is how this works. But the worst thing is actually all the descriptions and the action and stuff like that. It's so clunky. Literally, everything just goes clunk, clunk, clunk off the page. But even when the guy was talking, maybe actually if I was reading it, I wouldn't notice how bad a lot of the of the dialogue, well, dialogue and description and action and just writing is bad, you know, because it says the loudness of the crash, you know, in these words. As I was going through, I'd made a note of them on my iPhone as I was going through. And it's like, gunfire crackled like firecrackers. And I'm like, gunfire crackled like firecrackers? Are you serious? And then as you go to the funeral and there's lots of lilies on the stage, and it's like, there were so many lilies, it's like somebody wanted to answer the question, how many lilies can fit on this stage? The answer, this many. And I'm like, so how many? It's like, you say there's lots of lilies, and it's like someone wanted to, so it's how many lilies did fit on the fade? And then there's another thing. I mean, this is a small thing, but cell phones don't ring. They Twitter. I think three times in the book, it's like his cell phone twittered. Now, reading it now in 2010, I'm thinking Twitter. You know, Twitter is Twitter. So if your cell phone twitters, it means you got a Twitter message. And I thought this book was written in 2009, but obviously it was written in 2006 or something like that. So I understand why cell phones can still Twitter back then, but even do cell phones Twitter? I'm not really sure. Even if they don't Twitter, do they Twitter when they're making noise? One of the things that really jumped out at me, and this is something I'm definitely going to have to go back through my own writing and pick up on, is the adverbs. Now, there's a whole thing, it's like, don't use adverbs in fiction. It was like this basic writing advice. And I've always thought, yeah, they can't be that bad. You know, it's just, you know, if you need to say someone does something quickly, just say they do something quickly. I don't really mind adverbs so much. But some, oh boy, I was writing this down. I decided in like these two chapters, or just yesterday, actually, I started writing down, making a note of them just in my listening yesterday. This is just with the end of the book. And also, hopefully, you'll be able to pick up on the actual sort of like how stupid the action is just by some of the adverbs used in these sentences. I'll just read out this list here. He peered closely at the screen. She looked squarely at you. He grinned coldly, burying it deeply into the wall. She smiled slightly at him. Smiled slightly? I'm not sure. He leaned in to look closely at the screen. Ross seriously contemplated this. The boy robotically nodded, raised his head to look about wearily. He walked briskly. They stood silently by. Okay. Which the guards closely examined. Ross turned to Ross questioningly. He nodded grimly, floating impossibly there. The shots cracked flatly across the tarmac, revving their engines deafeningly, and drove howlingly past him. Drove howlingly past him? I'm never quite sure about that. Shook his head sadly, screeching around drunkardly, spun crazily as they fell. And I was just reading these things, and it's like every like few sentences you get these adverbs, they just go clunk, clunk, clunk. Like I say, this is something I'm definitely going to have to look back through my own fiction for, because I think I probably do use adverbs, but I'm thinking, can't be that bad. Maybe if I read them out, it would stick out as bad as that, but I can't do it. And also, someone, they lose their eyesight and they look around blindly and glance blindly and blindly glanced around, and I'm like, what the hell? What do you do that? Anyway, so the writing is pretty terrible as well. Again, I don't mind all of these faults at the beginning of the book, because there's still that concept, there's still that core idea, there's still that, you know, the elevator pitch which is driving me through to the end of the novel, which I think, oh, this is going to be good. And finally, the themes of the book, not really worth talking about. There's this kind of like over-reliance on technology thing. Is that bad or is that good or something like this? And there's maybe this whole thing about, you know, the government being run by business. Is that bad or is that good? I'm not really sure. Going on like this. So there's these bigger themes going on about, you know, like technology and society and privacy and non-privacy and all that kind of stuff. But then again, I'm not quite sure what the point is, because it ends at the end of the book and suddenly it's like, so is this good? Are we meant to be rooting for the demon and this new kind of thing? Are we meant to enjoy that 6,000 people died just because they work for spammers? And I'm like, is that good or is that bad? I'm not really sure. And like, I don't know, like he talks about how bad materialism, capitalism and consumerism is, and that we should have bigger things to work for and it should be community and all this kind of stuff. I'm thinking, the technology that we see around us today that you think is awesome and that you see in the book comes from private enterprise, it comes from businesses, it comes from materialism, capitalism. So that all the stuff that you're talking about how is awesome, and like this computer game's awesome, and this thing's awesome, and this great, and that's great as well, the only reason that exists is because capitalism exists, and that it's run the way that it runs. If you think it should be different, that's great, but you can't then use the tools of one thing to fight against that thing and then think it's going to be good in the future. So again, the whole theme, thematic kind of stuff in the book is so confused and so just shitly done, I couldn't really get anything out of it. So as a conclusion, I really want someone else to write this novel, actually finish it, which is a big thing, and actually and actually do a good job of it, because it's a great idea. I think it should be done. And actually, Jesse from SFF Audio, he did send me another audiobook, a short story, I think, which is when someone's done something similar. So I'm going to have to give that one a listen as well. But again, what I really enjoyed about this book is actually doing this review, because it's so good to rant about stuff. It's actually fun to tear apart a book like this, even though I know a lot of people probably enjoy this book. But again, if you think that you can defend anything about this book, it's like my review of Snow Crash. Everyone says, oh, yeah, but, you know, I'll forgive that fault. And I'm like, and what about this fault? And say, oh, I can forgive that one as well. And so what about this one? Oh, I can forgive that as well. So what you do is I just read a whole book of faults that I can't forgive, and other people read a whole book of faults that they can forgive or just don't think about. So if you think you can defend this book, please send me an email. I'd really like to find out more about it from a point of view of someone who actually enjoyed it. And again, I did enjoy the start. It could have been a good 3-star novel. I mean, like, the writing was never good enough and the characters were never good enough for it to be like a 4-star or 5-star novel. But, you know, it could have been a good 3-star novel, but it just fell apart a third of the way through. And the other thing that I do like about it is that it's going to make me a better writer. I think sometimes reading awesome books is discouraging to be a good writer, and reading bad books is encouraging to be a better writer. So I'll have to see how my own novel goes when I go back through and edit it next week. So I'm going to give this book 1-star, and that's about it. So thanks a lot for listening. Oh, yeah, my next novel, I'm reading Roadside Picnic by the Strugatsky brothers at the moment. It's because I tried The Final Circle of Paradise last year and could never get through it because it was just a bit weird. But I think Roadside Picnic is meant to be their best novel. I think it's one of the science fiction masterworks in the series, masterwork series as well. So I think that's generally considered the better one. So I've got that one to read as well. And I've got a few other audiobooks, which I don't need to list now, because I'll say which one I'm going to listen to next when I actually get around to choosing it, because I've only just finished reading this one. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening. Email me, luke@juggler.net, with any feedback, with any book suggestions, with anything at all. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. Check out my blog for all my other projects and writing projects and juggling and video and music and everything like that. It's at lukeburridge.com/blog, and my other podcast as well, my new travel podcast. And also, the best thing that you can do is get onto goodreads.com, sign up for goodreads.com account, or if you're already there, make me a friend, follow my reviews, and also check out the SFBRP listeners sort of discussion group kind of thing as well, which is the best way, which is a really good way to send me comments, but also other people can and see the comments on there as well. And that group's been hanging around for about a year or something now. You might as well check that out too. That's it. I hope you enjoyed this review, and I'll catch you next time.